I love you, Thomas. God bless you. God bless you. We gotta get him off the depression. You know? Help him out here. My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. And it's good to see you. I haven't found necessarily having drinks since January 25th, 1981, and doesn't mean I haven't had a drink, you know, but I haven't found necessary. You know, it's 41 years of undetected drinking, you know. They're never going to catch me. No, I've been sober for a while. It's my 41st year of trying to make it, you know, one day at a time, right? So it's great to be here. This is like, I'm seeing faces and people that I haven't seen in a year and a half. This group started by James Friedman, who I sponsored. God bless him. You know, I know he's not here, for he has a good reason, but I know you guys know James. And he started this, what, 15 years ago? How many years ago? 15, 20 years ago. I think I did the first meeting in this group. I think it was at the Chabad. Wasn't that at the Chabad? And then every year thereafter, for like 15 years, I did a step series here, you know, which is 3 months, and got to know a lot of the people here, and I see faces of people, you know, because this is like my home is 60 miles south of here, so it's like an hour and a half to get up here during rush hour and everything like that. So and we used to come here and go out to dinner, and I think we're going out to dinner tonight, and we're gonna be do that's gonna be the deal. We're gonna do that, and I brought up a few friends too, and so it's like my mishpucha, you know, it's like Yiddish for like my family. So I'm seeing people, you know, that I loved. I've seen for like 15 years coming up here and doing this deal. And there's just so many of you that it's great to see you. A lot of you guys I've seen on Zoom. You know, I love the Zoom thing. I go to about 3 or 4 meetings a day on the Zoom thing. I see a lot of you guys from Zoom, but I haven't been able to get up here and everything with you guys, and it's just great. We came now. Usually when I come up here, you know, we have a little carpool and everything. Got a bunch of guys, and my son-in-law's here, Armando, and Justin and Joshua, and who else do we have here? And oh yeah, and Clark came up with me, and Jimmy drove. Thank you very much, Jimmy. I used to drive myself, but you know, I'm old. It's over for me. You know, what's the point? You know, I had this attack of vertigo. I never had vertigo. Young people don't get it. But I had an attack of vertigo last night, so I couldn't. It's a wonderful feeling if you've ever been totally stoned out of your mind, and you've ever been drunk, and you've ever been lying in a bed, and the bed starts spinning like a fucking top. You know what I mean? A million miles per hour, and you put your foot down to try to stop the bed from spinning. It's like that, but just a little bit worse, and you're sober when it's happening. It's scary shit, I'll tell you. But I had to call up a couple of doctors, and I got to have a couple of my daughters call me up and tell me I was stupid, and which is supposed to cure me, you know. I mean, I understand they called me up, they were worried, and you're stupid, you should go to the emergency room. I said, no, I don't think so. So, but I'm feeling a lot better now, and I got to drive up with, usually when I drive up here, I haven't been here for a year because of the pandemic, but usually when I drive up here, or when I drive anywhere to do these set meetings, I've been doing them for 30 years, 30, 35 years. So usually when I drive up, I'll be playing hymns. You know, I'm a hymnaholic. I like playing hymns and different types of music. I'm pretty eclectic, and we usually drive up here in total silence except for the music, and for about an hour and a half, and it's very nice and relaxing. But I had the privilege of having with me today Nick, who's 20 years old, and he's got 8 months. And he's a Zoom baby. He's right there. And there he is. Nick, yeah. I want you to stand up. Yeah, I want you to have a little attention. Now, thank you. That's it. Sit down. See how he's dressed up? And Nick, it was wonderful because we drove up for an hour and a half. And we didn't have to worry about silence because for an hour and a half, Nick told me his life story. You know, his life story, you know, and, you know, 20 years, he doesn't have much of a life to tell. But, I mean, he told me the entire life story, you know, in case I should develop laryngitis or something, he would be prepared, you know what I mean, to step into the gap. And I appreciate that, Nick. This is very enlightening. And so it's good to be here. And it's good to see, oh, look at these guys in the front row, and good to see all you guys. So Listen, here's the deal. Let me just tell you I'm here to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. So don't pay any attention to anything I say. Don't get pissed. Listen, if you want to be pissed off, you can, you know. You know the spiritual axiom. Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you, you know. And so if I say something disturbed, there's no sense getting pissed. This is just my story. It's just my opinion, my story. I'm chock full of opinions. I'd like to say it's based upon experience. My first sponsor used to say, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with experience. So I know alcoholics are all brilliant. We're all fucking brilliant. We know everything. I understand that, you know, and they say, there's some guy in the back row, he's already saying, who's this asshole, you know? I should be up there talking. I get that. I understand what I'm dealing with when I'm dealing with alcoholics. They're all cynics, and they're not even skeptics. They're cynics, you know, bullshit, you know. I know what the story is. Who the hell do you think? He doesn't know me, and I know what I'm dealing with here, but that's okay. I'm just gonna, it's based upon, at these prices, you know, it's based upon my experience in here, my experience with my own sobriety. I'm 72 years old. I came here when I was 31 and been married 40 years, something like that, 40, 41 years. Raised four kids sober and got seven, soon to be eight grandkids, God willing, and some wonderful sponsors, four wonderful sponsors and a mentor, and you know, I've been around for a while, so I've seen them go, I've seen them come, I've seen them mostly go, you know what I mean? And I've been with the guys that stick around and have been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence and experienced much of heaven and are the real deal. You know, that sixth step, they say this is the step that we separate the men from the boys. I've been hanging out with the men for 40 years, so I know what it takes to get to that deal. And I've watched the guys that are fly by night, they make it for 3 years or 5 years or 10 years and they're gone. You know, they just can't seem to get it together. So I know about that deal. So I'm just gonna talk to you about my experience. Now how I do these things, I've been doing the step series for a long time, and you know, when you first come in here, and what I'm gonna share, because I think it's an appropriate thing to do it. I mean, obviously I'm familiar with the literature and I'm familiar with the steps, but it says our experience, you know, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like and what happened, what it's like to now. And although I'm going to talk a little bit about what I've learned and my experiences and things like that, I'm going to try to intersperse it a lot with stories, because I think you have to put yourself in the deal. I mean, this isn't for me to give you a lecture, although I can tend to do that sometimes. Tell you a little bit who I am and what I am and what my story is. And to the extent that you identify with it, fine. If you don't, fine. Don't worry about it. I get all wired up and crazy at times, and I say shit that disturbs people. And I don't mean to disturb you. It's just something that happens whenever I speak. You know, I'm sorry. It's just a natural thing. It's no use you getting upset. You'll get in your car. You'll drive home. You'll be thinking about that asshole. Why did he say that? Who the hell invited him? And I'll already be in the car saying, oh, why did I say that? And I'll forget the whole thing. You know what I mean? So don't even worry about it. Just relax. It's just an AA meeting. We're not invading China or anything like that. This isn't anything big. You know, we're just for an hour. Nobody will drink, I suppose, hopefully. I don't do it like I used to do it. When I first started doing the steps, you know, when you first come to AA, and there's probably some new people here, these steps are weird. They're like strange. They're like, it's not, they're counterintuitive to the way an alcoholic thinks or lives his life. They're just not something. So they have to be explained to you 15,000 times. You don't understand why you have to. Forget about how you do it. You don't even know why you have to do it. I mean, why do I have to do that? And all that sort of stuff. And there's a lot of questions and stuff like that. And, you know, sometimes people come in here and they're so beaten down, which is a good thing, by the way, so that they don't ask a lot of questions. They just get right into it because they'll do anything. You know, there's a line in the book that says, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take it. You're not even ready. Did you know that there's a step before the steps? Did you know there's a step before the steps? You need to pay attention to this because this is true. There is a step before the steps. And the step is, if you want what we have, whoever we are, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take the steps. And we have a lot of people come in here, they're not ready. They want what they had. They don't want what we have. They want what they had. And they may be willing to go to any length to get what they had. You know, get laid, you know, hang out in the parking lot and talk to the girls, you know, staring at the blonde in the front row. You know, I got to tell you, I talk from the standpoint of a guy. I have no idea what's going on with gals or anything like that, but I talk from the standpoint of a guy. You understand? They come in here for other reasons, which is not bad or good. It's just the fact of life with alcoholism. And we're going to get into a lot of that, because what I really want to talk to you about, as this goes on, you'll see, I'm not going to talk to you about alcohol. Let me tell you about the first step. If you don't think you're an alcoholic, just keep drinking. I think the best way to take the first step is to drink yourself into it. Not have me convince you of it. Not have me, for 41 years, I've been trying to convince alcoholics who don't believe they're alcoholics and don't want to stop drinking. I've been trying to convince them not to drink. It's a very frustrating thing. I spent 8 years on Relay, you know, in service. When I got in here, I got into the whole thing. You'll learn more about it. 8 years on Relay. If you were in Miami and it was Friday night, anytime after 8 p.m. at night until 8 a.m. or 9 o'clock the next morning, and you called up AA, you got me for 8 years on a Friday night to Saturday morning. So for that 8-year period, nobody got sober. Nobody got sober. Nobody got sober, you know. And I learned that you spend hours and hours. After a while, I stopped spending now. I used to spend hours with people on the phone, and they tell me, and then this happened, and that happened, and this happened, and that happened, then happened. Then after 2 hours, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'd say, okay, so about the drinking thing. He says, oh, I don't want to stop drinking. I'm just lonely or something like that. And, you know, and you can hear, they'd be talking about that. They'd say, No, you got to listen to me. This is an alcoholic. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. There's nobody there. They're lonely. It's gals. You got to listen to me. And I sit there listening, getting it, trying to get a second. Of course, I was relatively new, and so I'd listen for an hour and a half. And every once in a while, they'd stop. They'd say, could you excuse me for a second? And I'd hear a glass, you know, with ice going into it. Clunk, clunk. Blah, 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 blah. It's okay, you know. And so after 2 years of that shit, you know what I mean? You know, there's nothing like dealing with alcoholics or working with alcoholics or sponsoring with alcoholics to know what this disease is really about, you know? But after a while, I pretty much got the picture. I let them talk for about 5 minutes, and then I'd ask the question, do you want to stop drinking? And then if they didn't want to stop drinking, there wasn't much I could do for them. I remember I got a call one time from but every once in a while, let me tell you what would happen. Every once in a while, you get a call from a guy or a gal. It'd be like 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning. They'd say, yeah, what can I do for you? And he'd say, yeah, my name's Joe. He says, you know, and I can't stop drinking. I want to stop drinking. I got a drinking problem, and I can't stop drinking, and I need help. That's it. That's all he would say. I need help. I can't stop drinking. No story. No, you got to listen to me. He'd just say, I need help. And then he would listen, and he's waiting. Because that guy, you know, my sponsor used to say, some people want help, and some people just want attention. What you're going to learn is this is a very serious disease, and that alcoholics are fucking insane. And I say they're fucking insane because I speak alky. You understand what I'm saying? Because I know that in your head, you use the word fuck all the time. And there's a new guy in here sitting in the back row who's saying, I hate this guy. Who's this guy? And I say, fuck. One time he says, I like this guy. Because you see, he feels like we're all assholes, and we're all holier than thou, and this is church shit, and this is God stuff, and everything like that. And you know something? He's got his guard up, and he says, I can't believe I have to be here, because he uses it all the time, and I'm here for the new guy. And I'm here for the guy with 15, 20 years that are no longer happy with his sobriety. And I know how the new guy talks, and I know how he thinks, you know? You know, sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous, I hear words like, And I'm going to tell you something. I'll tell you something right now about me. I'm and you'll hear more about this. I'm a Jewish kid from New York, And I'm a born-again Christian. You understand? So we get this out of the way. I go to church. I have a deacon in the church and all sort of crap. And you'll hear about how that all happened, and that's my search. Doesn't have to be your search. You understand what I'm saying? And so I hear a lot of bad-mouthing of religion and all sort of stuff from people that have no idea of what AA is about or where it came from, or the history of AA. And you'll hear a lot about that. You know, for those who really want to grow up and not be children in here. You know what I mean? Want to grow up and become men or women. Okay? And the bottom line is, you know, you got a lot of people, what happens in AA is you got a lot of people that put down religion or religious people because they're holier than thou, while in AA they become the most holier than thou assholes you can possibly imagine. Judging people, judging religions, people, judging everything that moves. Just judging people by every because they become more self-righteous than any person I've ever come in sitting in AA rooms. Sitting in AA rooms. And you want to wear your coat like a loose garment in here. You know, we have a rule, it's called Rule 62. Don't take yourself too seriously. You know, when I look at somebody and I try not to judge people, but I my sponsor says stick with the winners. And I learned a long time ago that when an old timer says that man's sober, he doesn't mean not drinking. You got a shitload of people not drinking and they're not sober. Not by old timer standards. You know, you got a lot of people not sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, working some sort of program that they think is a program, which is really a compromise, and they don't understand why every once in a while they hear this voice in their mind that says, I'm a worthless piece of shit. I wish I was dead. They don't understand that they're 5 years sober and 10 years sober, and they don't understand why they're driving in the car and they always say, I'm a loser. I might as well kill myself. I'll never get this thing. They don't understand why they're always talking bad shit about themselves. They don't understand why they're always saying, I don't give a crap what people think about me. I don't give a shit. Sometimes they'll say it out loud. They say, I don't give a crap what they think about me. They don't understand why they're always telling themselves they don't give a crap what other people think about them, when it should be pretty evident that people that really don't give a crap what other people think about them never say to themselves, I don't give a crap what other people think of. They say things like pass the ketchup, but they don't say that shit, you know? Or they get up every day, you know? They get up every day sober, and they say, man, if I only had a different wife, I'd be okay. Oh, if I only had a different husband, I'd be okay. Oh, if I only had a husband. Oh, if I only had a wife, I'd be okay. Oh, if I only could lose 50 pounds, I'd be okay. If I only had a new car, I'd be okay. If I only had a new job, I'd be okay. If I only could make more money, I'd be okay. You know, if only I had this, if only I had that, I'd be okay. And they do it 3, 4, 5, 20 times a day. They watch TV, they say, oh, if only I had that. If only I lived there. You know, they wake up in the morning, they're if-onlyers and yes-butters and you-don't-understanders and sober. Do it all the time when you're drinking. That's the alcoholic way of life. Alcoholic life is the normal life for us. You know, they can't separate the truth. An alcoholic life is a life where you're an if-onlyer, a yes-butter, a you-don't-understander, and all the time. But that goes on even after you stop drinking, because the drinking isn't even the problem. When a guy drinks after 10 years, I understand about the craving part. I get that. But when somebody drinks after 5 years, you know how many people in AA come back after a year of not drinking and they drank? 3 months of not drinking and they drank? A year of not drinking, they drank? 10 years of not drinking, they drank? 20 years of not drinking when they drank? You ever seen that in AA? There are people in here who will tell you this is, how long have you been sober? Well, I've been around AA for 25 years. You know, how long are you sober now? 3 days, you know what I mean? You know how many people do that? Most people. Most people. When somebody drinks after an appreciable time of sobriety, they're not drinking because they crave alcohol. They're drinking because they hate being sober. They're drinking because they've never been sober. They've never experienced sobriety. You know what? They're treading water just waiting to drink. You know, that's why people drink after a year sobriety or 6 months sobriety, because they've never been all in. They've never utterly abandoned themselves to God. They've never done this thing thoroughly. Really haven't seen a person. They don't even know what thoroughly is. Because, like it says in the 12 and 12, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious, and of true happiness will find none at all. And most people have precarious sobriety. It's like they're in intensive care for a year or two or five, just wait until the day that they drink or drug or do whatever they're going to do. Because they're not dealing with the consequences of alcoholism. They're dealing with the physical consequences of alcoholism. It's like they're in a cage, you know, they're locked up. They may have become entirely ready to stop drinking. They haven't become entirely ready to stop whoring. They haven't become entirely ready to stop chasing the shit in this world that they've been chasing for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Because they absolutely know, without any doubt, that this AA thing is really good, but we all know $1 million would solve all our problems. And you had the money, and you lost it, and you blew it. And you had the gal and the guy, and you lost it, and you blew it. And you had the car, and you lost it, and you blew it. And you have it over and over and over again, the things of this world, chasing them, trying, doing anything to get them, getting pissed at anything that gets in your way, feeling sorry for yourself if you don't get them. And then when you finally get them, worrying about losing them, and worrying about the bank repossessing them, and worrying about her leaving you or him leaving you or whatever it is, and then you get to worry about that, and then they're gone, and then you get depressed, and you're over and over and over, and you finally get the gal that you love, and you know it's going to be perfect, because if only I had her, it would be okay, and 3 months later, you're looking at the other gals, and you finally get the car you want, because you know it's going to be perfect, and 3 months later, you're looking at the other cars, and you finally get the job you want, because you know if you only had that, it would be okay, and 3 months later, you're saying, I hate this damn job, I hate my boss, and you can't understand why you absolutely know that these things will fix you, and you'll go out and get them, this new blouse, whatever, a boob job, I don't care what it is, and nothing ever works for you. I'm an alcoholic because no woman, no car, no amount of money, no nothing ever worked for me just as well as just a few drinks. And if alcohol worked for me the way it worked for me when I was 18, 19, 20 years old, I'd still be drinking it. But the sad or good news for me is that alcohol stopped working for me. And the sad news is it stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me, and I hurt a lot of people. But let me tell you something. You know what? The women work too. The women work too. That's the real alcoholism. You know why I know alcohol isn't the problem? I mean, look, because the big book says alcohol is only a symptom of the problem. It's only a symptom. It's only a symptom. You see somebody, they can't stop drinking, you say, he's an alcoholic. You want to know something? You can be sober, I know you're an alcoholic. I just hear you say, I'll show them. You can be sober, and you say, I'll show them. He's a fucking alcoholic. They don't know who they're screwing with. You know who I am. Fucking alcoholic, you know. I don't need to be drinking. I can tell you're an alcoholic. I can shake your hand and tell you you're an alcoholic. 3 minute conversation, I know you're an alcoholic. I just listen to what you're saying, how you talk about yourself, how you're talking about the things of this world, your attitude. I know what an alcoholic personality is. I get that. That's the real disease centers in your mind, not your body. Every time you say, if only I had this, I'd be okay. You know what you're saying, don't you? You're saying, every time you say, if only I had this. Anybody ever say to themselves, if only I had this, I'd be okay? Raise your hand if you ever say that. If only I had this, I'd be okay. So whenever you say, if only I had this, or think if only you had this, you'd be okay. You know what you're saying? You're saying, I'm not okay. You know that, don't you? No, you don't know that. You don't know that, do you? How many times a day do you look at something and say, man, I wish I had that? How many times do you look at something and say, if only I had that? How many times do you think, well, if only this didn't happen, I'd be okay? How many times can a person say to himself over and over again, I'm not okay, I'm not okay, I'm not okay, I'm not okay, and actually wonder why they think they're pieces of shit? Well, you see, one of the consequences of being, see, you can stop the drinking. How do you stop that shit? When you don't even know that shit's a problem. When you don't even know that's a problem. Because you wanted something, that's the way you think. It doesn't seem like it's unusual because you've been thinking like that ever since you're a sperm. You know what I mean? Your whole life you think like that. And you know what that is? That's alcoholism. You know what Carl Jung said? He says you got to have an entire psychic change. You got to be reborn. It says ideas, emotions, and attitudes that are the guiding force of your life are suddenly cast one side, and they become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. You got to go from if only to I've got everything I need. How do you go from if only to God, thank you for my life? How do you go from I can't believe another day, or when am I going to get this, or what's going to happen to the money, to thank you, Lord, when you wake up in the morning? How do you go from that? Because if you don't get to that, you ain't going to stop drinking, and even if you stop drinking, you're going to be an emotional wreck and live a life of quiet desperation. What are the consequences of alcoholism? So my first wife, I said, if only I had her, I'd be okay. And she walked in the room, she had legs up to here, you know, gorgeous, you know. I mean, she was, but I mean, you know, alcoholics say that. I've never heard an alcoholic says, oh, my first wife, she was ugly, you know. Everybody, you know. But she was a pretty gal. And I said, you know, I said, like, I remember my first AA meeting, one of my first AA meetings. I'm sitting there in the AA meeting, because I was a lounge lizard. You know, some of you guys know what that is. I was every Friday night, every Saturday, I'm out there looking for her, who's going to make me okay, you know. Her, you know. And I wanted what she had, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. Let me tell you something. I spent more money I didn't have to buy shit I didn't need to impress people I didn't like. You can possibly imagine, you know. Apparently, I learned when I was 10 years sober, because I couldn't understand with all the money I was making, how come I was broke? And then my sponsor, who wasn't as intelligent as me, my sponsor explained to me that when you spend more money than you make, you go into something called debt. I was going for my PhD in algebraic topology, you know what I mean? I was a math major, then I became a lawyer, and I didn't understand that if you kept on spending money, you didn't have, but I had to spend the money, because you know why? Because somehow, some way, if I buy this, I feel better about myself, because apparently, alcoholics have an intense sense, deep inside, that they don't realize of feeling inadequate or unworthy. At the same time, when we're saying we're the greatest. We got one part of our brain saying I'm the greatest, if only yet people understood, if only people knew who I was and everything like that. And the other side, we're saying I'm such a piece of shit. When you got those two things going, you got a sort of friction going on, which is helped by scotch, by the way. Scotch will make that go away, you know. And there's just the thinking is insane. That's why in the second step, why do you think they say, come to believe that a power greater than ourselves would restore us to sanity. Restore us to sanity. That a power, something will restore you to sanity. And you do understand that you can only be restored to sanity if you're insane. Did anybody explain that to you? A lot of alcoholics miss that because they don't think they're crazy. They think they just have a drinking problem or a few other problems. They don't realize that they're crazy, that they're selfish, they're self-centered, they're driven by 100 forms of fear and delusion, that they step on the toes of others and they retaliate, you know, seemingly without provocation, when we learn they've made decisions based upon self, which puts them in a position to be hurt. So an alcoholic is self-aware and right, though they usually don't think so. Above everything, we must get rid of alcoholism. And they read that in the book, and they say, that's the basic part of alcoholism. And they say, what does that mean? Because it's a lot of words, and they don't understand it. They don't even know where they're selfish. We're basically good boys. And my sponsor explained that to me. If you get a right sponsor, a good sponsor will explain it to you. He says, what that means, Russ, is you don't give a shit about anybody except yourself. I said, well, I like the way they say it in the book better. I don't like it the way you say it. I don't like the way... So how do you do it? How do you even figure out the consequences of your alcoholism when you're so well defended as an alcoholic? I mean, some guy comes up to you and says, you're an alcoholic, you're yourself, and you say, hey, go fuck yourself. You know, how about that? You know, I know you think I have a drinking problem. I get that. I understand knowing where you are from what you're looking at, from what you're seeing me, you think I have a drinking problem. Let me tell you something. I don't have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems. And as a matter of fact, my drinking perfectly matches my problems. And pretty soon my problem's going to go away, and I'm not going to have to drink anymore. So thank you for your advice, but why don't you go fuck yourself? You understand? In other words, if you want to talk to me about my drinking, you better be prepared for me to talk about everything I know about you and your frickin' mother. You know what I mean? Because it ain't going to be for free. Who the hell you think you are? And I get angry at you, and I make the whole thing go away. Because I'm insane. Because that's I'm nuts. Because I'm, and but I don't think I'm crazy. And everybody I hang out with in the bars, they think and act the same way I do. That's why I love them, because they're the only people that understand me. So all I do is hang around alcoholics. Holy shit, I'm still doing it. I'm still doing it. All I do is hang around with alkies, sober alkies, drunk alkies, crazy alkies. I just love them because they laugh at this shit. Other people look, you know, if you weren't alcoholics, if you were like the Kiwanis Club, they'd be looking at me like they were looking at some sort of germ under a microscope or something. What the hell is this guy talking about, right? So how do we even learn about this stuff? You spend the first 10 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous by getting crushed by repeated humiliations, the final crushing of your self-sufficiency, learning about how crazy you are. The way you learn it is you get crushed and crushed and crushed and crushed and broke and broke. And why am I broke? He says, because you spend money like a dream, because all you do is spend money you don't have. Because you feel so crappy about yourself. You don't know how, because you're self-destructive. Because like Carl Menninger said, when he wrote the book Man Against Himself, book on suicide, he had a whole chapter on alcoholics, said alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. I can destroy myself, but I don't need booze to destroy myself. My thinking will destroy me, will screw me up. Just my thinking and how I think about things. My first wife says to me, Mary, the gal that I thought if only I had her, I'd be okay. And I had her and I got her and I wined her and I dined her and I did the deal and I got her and all that sort of stuff. And then had a baby, you know, beautiful house on Miami Beach, on the golf course, everything like that. Job, big shop at the state's attorney's office, division chief, major crimes prosecutor. You know, couldn't get home. I get in the bar at 4:30 in the afternoon. Well, it ain't Well People's Anonymous, you know, I can tell you that. That's okay, that happened to me. I remember I used to rail against people that left their phones on and did stuff like that, get all pissed at them and everything. On this Rule 62 thing, now, you know, I realize it's such a big deal, Rule 62, don't take yourself too seriously, because I realized that if you really want to know how sober somebody is, watch them and see what pisses them off. Just watch them and see what pisses them off. Don't just look at them and see what they get angry about. That'll tell you how sober they really are. So I used to get angry, you know, about, you know, I'd be talking and, you know, somebody's phone would go off. I'd say things like, which I actually believe is true to a certain extent. I would say things because my sponsor told me, I said, if you can't turn off your phone during an AA meeting, let me tell you something, you're not sober and you're not ready to be sober. And I would say shit like that. I would say shit like that, which I believe to a certain extent generally is true, you know. You got to be willing to go to any length. I know it's not like climbing Mount Everest, but I mean, if you can't turn your phone off, if you're texting during an AA meeting, you ain't ready for this deal. You're going to end up drinking anyway. However, I stopped saying that the day I said that and my phone went off. And I had to laugh at myself. And then I had to realize sometimes phones go off by accident, not by purpose. You know, to get so pissed off and everything about it, you know? Because I'm an alcoholic. So I go in the bar at 4:30 in the afternoon, and I come out at 4:30 in the morning with my wife and a kid at home, and my wife would say to me, and she'd be waiting dinner for me, rolling at 4:30 in the morning, sitting in a bar, 4 years married, 5 years married, 3 years married, sitting in a bar, my wife and the baby are at home, and I'm looking at the girls on the dance floor. I'm saying, man, if I could only have that blonde, if I only had that brunette, if I only had that redhead, my life would be okay, but I'm married. I'm married to this gal, you know? You know, you ever buy a new car? Anybody ever buy a new car? Isn't it great to get in a new car? You know the feeling when you get into a new car and you're driving around? Remember I bought one, I was like 18, 19, 20 years old, new Camaro, and I'm driving around, I think the whole world's looking at me. Like I'm like, every woman in China is looking at me. Yeah, I mean, I'm just waiting for them to look at me, you know, in the new car, and the, you know, it's gorgeous, you know, but, and you know, and then what happened is, But because I'm an alcoholic, and it made me feel like I was something. I walk in the bar with that good-looking blonde, and everybody's looking at me. Me and with that gal, and I felt I was like as drunk as I could be on the gal. You can be drunk on women. You can be drunk on cars. Anything that gives you that feeling that you're no longer an asshole, you're okay, you're a man, you're better than, you're okay now, you're drunk. I could never feel that way without the gal, without the car, without the money. You can get drunk on that crap. And then one day the car is a year old. Maybe it gets a flat. Maybe it gets a ding in it or something like that. And then you got to get it. You can't afford it, but you got to have a new car. You hate your car. You know, you hate people seeing your car. You know, you're embarrassed about your car. You know, and so I'm in the bar looking at the blondes, brunettes, and redheads and saying, if I only had this. And I never cheated, physically cheated on my wife, but you want to know something? When you leave a wife at home with a child and you get it at 4:30 in the morning all the time, you know who does that? Assholes do that. Bums do that. People that don't give a shit about other people's feelings do that. Monsters do that. I was a monster in a three-piece suit. But you gotta understand, she was used. She's like the used car. She's like the car to me. Women are like cars to me. I buy the car, it's brand new, I feel good. You have sex, everything's okay. 6 months later, I'm looking for a new car. Women are like cars for me, you know? At least the car doesn't talk back, you know? So there may be a gal in here, a guy in here, saying, man, this guy's an asshole. And let me tell you what the situation is. I am and I was. But you know, the great thing about knowing that you're an asshole and you're a jerk and you're an idiot is at least I know who I am. I don't make believe that I'm a good guy. I don't play make believe with this disease. And I don't put phony shit in my head about who I think I am. I know who I am. And because I know who I am, that's how grateful I am to God to turn me into something else. Because how can you be grateful to God and know what the miracle is when you know what a shit ass you were? How can you be grateful to God and realize what a miracle happened in your life when you're real, you know, if you're just one of these guys, maybe you don't have the disease I have. If you're just one of these people that you're basically a good boy, you don't hurt people, you're a nice guy, you had a little bit of a drinking problem, but you're not drinking anymore, thank God for the miracle, not going with it, well then you and I have different diseases. I'm a selfish, self-centered, evil asshole, you know? My sponsor said to me, how are you doing? I said, fine. He says, you must be getting your own way. And he was right, you know? So my wife finally says, you come home one more time, and I'm leaving you. One more, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. 12 words. I'm as sober as I am right now, listen to those 12 words. You come home drunk one more time, and I'm leaving you. It's clear. Clear. Sober. I got a wife, I got a son, everything's on the line. I get in my car, I drive three blocks. Stop at a light. And all of a sudden I think this. What the fuck did she mean by that? Really? What's that all about? I have no idea what she's talking about. When somebody, because I'm an alcoholic and I'm insane. So when somebody tells me something or I read something that I don't like, it confuses me. And I don't understand it. I don't get it. I make it go away. I hate the person. I get angry. I say that's bullshit. Whatever it is. And then I go to the bar and I have my one drink and I tell my buddy, Doug, I say, listen, I got to get home because Ronnie said if I come home drunk one time, she's going to kill me. And he puts his arm around me because it's not like I forgot about it. He puts his arm around me and says, well, she's never going to divorce you. She loves you. You're the greatest guy in the world. And I'm saying, man, that's exactly what I'm thinking. That's why I love these guys in the bar. These guys were the greatest guys in the world. That's what I'm thinking. So let me ask you, you see, that's a consequence of being an alcoholic. You never see the truth. You're delusional. You can't separate the truth from the false. And that shit goes on even after you stop drinking. Even after you've done your four step, you know, you can do your four step, and we'll get into that, and you can see some of this stuff come up, and your fifth step, more of this stuff comes up, but as you go along, and you continue to get in trouble, and get your ass kicked, and you have problems, and you don't know why, and you're blaming, and you're resenting, and then you gotta go away from that, you gotta talk to your spine, you see more shit, you say, that was fucking insane, why did I do that, you know, and you say, that's the real, how you can stop the drink, and how do you stop the thinking? Because if you can't stop the thinking, you'll start the drinking. Or you'll be sober, but you'll be miserable. And that's why Bill Wilson said the next step in the alcoholic's life is emotional sobriety. He said the real problem with alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. Lust and loves of this world. So I'm sitting in an AA meeting. And I'm watching. I'm in an AA meeting. I'm a lounge listed. This is my new lounge. I'm not drinking scotch. I'm drinking coffee. And I'm sitting here. What do you think I'm looking at? I'm looking at the blonde in the front row. You know? And I say to my sponsor what I've said to every alcoholic I've ever sat next to. Look at that guy in the gal in the front row. And he looks at me and he says, because you see, when you're insane, and you don't even realize your thinking is insane, is selfish and lustful, and you're a whore, and you have no integrity, when you don't understand that about yourself, because you think you're perfectly okay, because everybody you hung out with was okay, was exactly like you, and you don't even see that as a problem. You don't even understand the thinking that'll get you into trouble and make you feel crappy. But you make the mistake of asking somebody to sponsor you who's not insane. Now, when you're insane, and you link up with somebody that's not insane in AA, trust me, they're going to say things that are going to piss you off. You're going to ask them questions. They're going to say something. They'll say, you won't even understand. It's like they're talking Czechoslovakian. So I said, look at the blonde in the front row. And he said, Russ, what'd you used to drink? I said, scotch. He said, what kind of scotch? He said, J&B. He said, you see that gal in the front row? I said, yeah. He says, for you, that's a bottle of J&B with legs. You go, what the fuck? This is like crazy shit. And then all of a sudden I look at her again and this green bottle forms around her. So I tell my sponsor, and you know, really, you got to get rid of, how do you get rid of that thinking? Of course, if you're not ready to stop drinking, if you somehow link up the fact that you're not drinking with the fact that you got this sponsor and you want him to like you. And the one thing I had going for me is I had taken the first step. So I became entirely ready to have God remove the drinking. I became entirely ready to have God remove all the drinking. More than anything, I didn't want to drink. Didn't mean I didn't want to get laid. Didn't mean I didn't want to resent people. Didn't mean I didn't want to gossip about you and character assassinate you behind your back. Didn't mean I didn't want to think the way I think and do the things I want to do. Didn't mean that, but I didn't want to drink. I didn't want to drink. So you, all of a sudden you don't want to drink and you got this, and you're not drinking. And more than anything else, you don't want to drink, and you got the sponsor, and all of a sudden he's not even talking about drinking, he's talking about other shit. He's saying blondes or scotch with legs or something like that, and you don't want to piss him off, and you know, and all of a sudden you're sitting at a table with three other guys. And you're doing what you've done in the bar all the time. What have you done in the bar all the time? When I'm with three other guys in a bar, I talk shit about other people behind their back. I see some guy walk in with a good looking blonde in the bar, and I look at my friend and I say, look at that asshole. I mean, because if you're an alcoholic, you can tell the assholes. You can separate. You can tell who you hate. You know what I mean? And so I start telling you, I'm in an A room, and I say, look at that. You know that guy, Fred? He's a real, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he said, Russell, he says, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't talk about other people behind their back unless you have something good to say about them. I said, what? He said, we don't talk about other people behind their back. We don't gossip. I don't think it's gossip. Women gossip. I'm just, you know, talking. I'm just telling the truth, you know. He's an, you know, we don't say, and he says this. He says, so why don't you just shut up? And my mind, the nuclear bomb goes off in my mind. Because I can't believe, because now I want to rape his wife and kill his dog and blow him up. How dare he say this in front of me? But I had one problem. He says, I knew he loved me and I loved him and I knew my sobriety depended upon him, so I'm pissed off. But, you know, but what am I going to do? And then, so I start watching myself. And for the most part, I become like the AA police. I hear two people talking about somebody. I said, hey, we don't talk about people behind their back. And I stopped doing that because he embarrassed me, because he humiliated me. Because that's how we stop things, because we get humiliated. Not because of people pat us on the back. We stop doing shit because by repeated humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency, and we're embarrassed and we're ashamed. So we repent, we turn around, they say, I'm not going to do it anymore. And we change a little bit. And I stop talking shit about people behind their back. I stopped doing it for a month and I start feeling better. Now, if he had explained to me, Russell, if you stop talking shit about people behind their back, you'll stop thinking shit about other people and you'll start feeling better about yourself. Now, if he had explained it to me that way, in a civil manner, I would have understood it. Bullshit. You know what I mean? I said, that's bullshit, you know? He explained to me the only way you can explain to an alcoholic. Why don't you just shut the fuck up? Why don't you just go out and... He explained to me the way alcoholics need to explain to you. So when all of a sudden my wife tells me, come on, drunk more time, I'm going to leave you. And I say to myself, what the hell does she mean by that? That's a consequence of being an alcoholic. There are signals all over your life with bad shit happening to you, stuff happening to you, crazy shit happening to you. And you don't even see it. You're saying things like, what the hell do they mean by that? Or I don't even understand stuff. You don't even see it. You don't even notice it. Because you're so insane, you don't even know what the hell's going on around you. And that's the real alcoholism. That's the shit that centers in your mind, not your body. The drinking, that's the bullshit. So let me tell you, everybody stops drinking. Everybody stops drinking. Few people die, but everybody stops for a little while. You drink enough, you'll stop. You drink enough, you might die. That may be one of the ways you stop, but you'll stop if you drink enough. Or you'll come in here, you'll crawl in here, you'll stop drinking for a week, a month, you know, 2 weeks, 2 years, 3 years. Things just have to get bad enough where you get humiliated and then you'll stop, okay? But the thinking, the getting to the point where you get a sponsor and he tells you shut the hell up and you shut the hell up. When you get a sponsor and you tell him after a month because you have no money in the bank and you're broke and you can't pay the mortgage, and you're scared, and you don't know what to do, and there's no place to go, and you're not going to tell anybody in your A group about that, like you're a lawyer and you're broke. You know, not that you give a shit what they think about you, but you're not going to say that shit, you know what I mean? And then finally things get so bad, you don't know what to do, you go up to your sponsor and you explain it to him, because maybe he'll lend you $1,000 or something, and you say, listen, I have no money, I haven't paid the mortgage in 2 months, I'm scared what's going to happen to my wife and babies, I don't know what's going to go happen, I'm really going nuts, I don't know what to do. He says, well, I think I've got the answer for you. I said, really? He says, yeah, absolutely. I got the answer for you. He says, yeah. He says, I think it's about time you start making coffee for the group. And here he goes talking fucking Czechoslovakian to me. I mean, I got the feeling there was no conversation going on here. I'm talking about real shit. I'm not talking about the bullshit. I'm talking about real shit. I'm talking about money. I mean, I know it's not important to you, but for me, it's right up there with oxygen. You know what I mean? Money. He's talking about making coffee for the group. He says, here, let me show you how it's done. And I followed him over to the coffee. And he showed me how to make the coffee. There's how many scoops we put in, there's how we do it and everything. So he showed me how to make the coffee, and I made the coffee that night. And the next day, I didn't want to go to the meeting because I wasn't feeling good. Sometimes that happens. You just want to go to me because you're not feeling good. Or you don't want to go to me because you're feeling too good. Or whatever, I just don't want to go to me. But I had to go to the freaking meeting. Because I had to make the coffee. So I went to the meeting. And I made the coffee. And it was good in one meeting. Because no money. But I felt better. And I just kept on going to the meeting and making coffee. And 3 months later, I don't know what happened. The money came in. Everything worked out. I was sober. Some guy came up to me and he says, you know, I'll make the coffee. I said, I'm the coffee maker. Who the hell made you the coffee maker? You know? I made coffee for that group for 18 months. 18 months I made coffee for the group. So I've had guys who their sponsors have done the same thing and they say, I'm firing my sponsor because he doesn't understand me. You know, I've told him some real problems. He told me to make coffee and it's all, you got other guys that walk away from that shit. You know why I'm sober today? You know why I'm on my 41st year? Because for some reason I don't understand, I told my sponsor something that was a big problem in my life that I needed help with, and he told me to make coffee for the group, and somehow, for some reason, I followed him to the coffee and I made coffee. You know what that was? That was the first and second step. You know what that was? That was wanting what he had so much and not wanting to drink that I was willing to go to any lengths to do it. Very few people do that deal. Most of them either don't get a sponsor or don't talk to their sponsor. If their sponsor tells them to do something, they don't follow them because they haven't done the deal. They're just dry at the moment, not happy with their sobriety. So one last story. So I'm sitting in a room. I told this the other night. I love this story because it's true. You know, I mean, this is, you know, we come in here with no stories. No story. Yeah, here's my story. It's not my fault. I'm not to blame. I wouldn't have done it to him if he didn't do it to me. If he didn't, I got like alibis. I got no story. And you want to try to tell me what's wrong with me, I'm going to, you know, do what I said before. But you know how, because we're so well defended, you got to flank an alcoholic. Here's how you get a story. You're sitting in an AA group, and some guy tells a story or says something. You say to yourself, that son of a bitch is freaking crazy. And then all of a sudden you think, holy shit, I was doing that last Monday. You know what I mean? That's how you get your stories. And then you start hearing stories about what the guy did when he was drinking, what the guy did before he was drinking. And then you got stories about before you, yeah, I did that. We hear this shit, and then all of a sudden we got a story about what happened before we were drinking, stories what happened while we were drinking. Every day we're not drinking, we get these stories about shit happening in our lives, but we did this, and we didn't drink, and everything worked out, and you know, your mother said this, and you got mad, and usually you do this, but you didn't do that. They're all stories about the pain of being an alcoholic, the pain of life, overcoming it, doing this, victory, and then you go to your group and say, you wouldn't believe what happened to me today. And you share. You got a story. You do that for about a year, you got like about 10 or 15 stories. You can actually talk for a drink, talk about your stories. You know, you do it for about 2 years, you got, you know, 20 stories. Before, after, during. Do it for, you know, 10 years, you got 50 stories. You do it for 40 years, you got 270 stories. It's no longer a problem talking to a group. You know, the biggest problem is, which story do I tell? Because they're all your stories. There's stories about you, there's stories about alcoholism, there's stories about God, there's stories about this program, there's stories about miracles, and they're all personal to you, and they're important to you, because they're stories about your life. And the only sad thing is you don't have time to tell 200 stories. So one day, some guy bounced a $500 check. But you know something? They're all about the same thing. They're all about this disease, and they're all about crazy thinking, insane thinking, and they're all about sane thinking and a completely different way of living this life and being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. And the only reason it happens is because you expose yourself to people that are farther along, that want to help you, that got a handle on this thing. And the only reason it happens is because you're willing to expose yourself and do what they tell you to do. Follow directions. How about that? Following directions. So one day I was pissed off, somebody bounced a $500 check on me. Anybody ever check? Anybody ever have money owed to them, where somebody bounced a check on your stuff? You ever? Boy, I'll tell you, that frosted me, and it caused me to bounce checks, and it was just a bad thing, and I was pissed. And you know, like most alcoholics, I'm telling everybody I can run into, you know, like they're in AA, my story. And then he bounced the check. I'm doing it for like a week. I'm gonna kill him. I'm killing him in my mind. I'm dropping him in acid, you know, and other shit. So I told my sponsor this for the fourth time, you know. It's like pornography to me. Worry and being upset is like porn. I can't stop looking at it. I can't stop talking about it, you know. And not that it's making me feel better. I love the anger. I love the self-pity. I'm a self-pityaholic, so I tell my sponsor about that shit. And he looks at me, he says, well, you were talking about this last week. We talked about this already. He says, yeah, but the guy said, I can't believe, you know. He said, well, let me ask something. How would you, does it make you feel good? Talking about it? He says, no, I mean, I feel like crap. This guy, this is done. He said, well, let me ask something. How would you feel if it didn't bother you? Czechoslovakian again. So I say to him, which is the truth, I don't understand the question. I don't understand the question. I mean, if I told you in a bar or anywhere else, the guy bounced $500, he's an asshole, I can't believe the guy did it, you wouldn't say how it, you might say a lot of things. Yeah, that happened to me, the guy's an asshole, we ought to kill him, you know. You would not say how it, you would not say how, you would not say what he said. You understand? But he's in Alcoholics Anonymous, he's got 20 years, you know. So they're stupid, they talk funny. So he said to me, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? And I said, I don't understand your question. He says, well, it's a simple question. How would you feel if it didn't bother you? I said, no, the guy bounced a $500 check on me. What do you mean? How would I? Because my basic line would be, I always thought there was only one way of looking at things, only one way of reacting. So my statement to you is, well, if it happened to you, you'd feel the same way. And I would believe that. If it happened to you, you would feel the same way. And I'd seen people in AA dying of cancer and doing meetings and being happy. You know, apparently there's different ways that... And he said to me, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? I said, I don't understand the question. He says, it's a simple question. How would you feel if it didn't bother you? I said, you mean if it didn't bother me that he bounced a $500 check on me? He says, yes. If it didn't bother you, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? And I said... Well, if it didn't bother me, I'd feel fine. He said, there you go. I'll tell you a story one day, sometime about my other sponsor. He said, you know, he says, you're upset because you're upsettable. You know, I used to say to my sponsor, I'm sensitive. He says, no, great artist is sensitive. You're just touchy, you know. So I don't know whether that has anything to do with anything. I think I went over. Does that have anything to do with the first step? I don't know. We're going to talk about something. The steps are all in there. They're in there somewhere. Trust me. They're all there. The second step is there. The first step is there. The fourth step is there. The seventh step is there. The sixth step is there. The 12th step. They're all in there. They're all packed in there, you know. You hear what you're supposed to. You're going to hear what you're supposed to hear. If there's 100 people in this room, there's 100 different meetings going on. You know, some people walk away with nothing. Some people walk away with one thing they heard. And everybody walk away with a different thing they heard or what they think they heard. Most people hear things that I didn't even say. That's true. They'll say, man, when you said this, I didn't even say that. That's what they heard. Because they mixed it up with what they have going in their mind and their lives. And God knows exactly what they need to hear. And they heard what they heard. And that's the deal. So God bless you. Thank you very much.